This is the last message on the effect of gospel preaching and shepherding on college campuses. And maybe we can just start off. We'll read Roman numeral 1 together. God's desire is to have the church. All that God does is for the church, and every kind of work and ministry should be for the church. So you ever see the Lord's return? Whenever they try and put it in a movie or portray it in some way, in a painting, you know, he's always, I don't know why, but he's always kind of like this. You know, I don't know why his leg's up here, what that's supposed to do, like he's coming in for a landing or, you know. And he's just in there, it's like this kind of, oh, you know, like the angels are singing or, you know, I was thinking about that. Why is he always portrayed in that kind of way? You know, how much does he love the church? You know, you think about it. He was in eternity past, and he was just planning the church. And how long did he spend planning the church? You know, a fraction of eternity is what? Eternity. So the omniscient God is thinking for eternity about this church. Right? And then not only that, he's omnipotent. So he can do anything he wants. He can conceive of anything he wants. And he has eternity to think about it. Right? And so, and this is what he came up with. Right? And so then, he puts his plan into action. He creates the universe. He makes the earth. He puts man on the earth. He forms the spirit within man. And then man falls. And so then he goes through this whole Old Testament thing with the man falling and Abraham and then his children being enslaved and then bringing them out of slavery and giving them the law and then having them betray him over and over again. So then he becomes a man. This unlimited God limits himself into a zygote. You know what a zygote is? It's just a conceit. You know, can you imagine that? The triune God was a one-celled organism. Just think about that. How much bigger can you get and how much littler can you get? Right? What a limitation. And for 9 months, he was a fetus. You know, and he just kind of, wherever Mary walked, he went. Yeah, he's limited himself so much. Right, then he's born, needs to have his diapers changed and all that. God had to have his diaper changed. And he just limits himself. Right, and then he lives 30 years, and he goes and he has a ministry, and then even he died. Why? For the church. Right? And then, so he gets resurrected, he ascends, and he's waiting 2,000 years for the church to be prepared, for the bride to make herself ready. And don't you believe that the time is almost up? Don't you believe that? So now, Jude, Tsochka, you be the bride. Okay, stand up. Okay, so now it's time. He's ready. After all this that he's gone through, all this planning, all this executing, now she's ready. You know, I don't think he's coming back to get her like this. You know, I think it's more like, yeah! He is so happy that she is ready because he has put so much into her. That now it is just time for my wedding day and I am ready. Amen. Right? I was at a wedding a couple of months ago and I saw, you know, everybody looks at the bride when she's walking down the aisle. I kind of snuck a peek at the groom and he was just like, yeah, his face, he was so happy. because it was his wedding day, and he was looking at his bride. You know, so the reason I want to bring this out is God desires to have the church. All that he does is for the church, and every kind of work and ministry should be for the church. If God puts that much into the church, shouldn't we put everything we have into the church? You know, is there anything worth holding back? You know, we should have the same desire that the church would be built up. So, you know, I think sometimes it's easy to kind of fall into a habit where we do as little as we need to instead of as much as we can. Right? The meaning of our lives is the church. The meaning of the universe is the church. So we should do everything we can to see the church prepared. Right? Not just the full-timers, not just the elders, but every one of us. Right? So, you know, like yesterday, Bill was sharing, the students are the forefront of the work on the campus. We should have your students should have a thought, I want to gain somebody for the church life. That's why I'm at college. Is there somebody at this college that the Lord wants to bring them into the church life? And that's why I'm going here. So, anyway, so then the result of the work on the campuses is for the churches. It's not for a campus work. It's for the churches. So we should not forget the goal of gaining people is to bring them into the proper church life. Do not wait too long before bringing the new believers into the practice of the church life in the homes. So what happens is, you know, just because we're not different. Dave's no different. I'm no different. Andrew's no different. Deion's no different. We all have a fallen nature, right? And so something happens. Once you start serving, first thing that's going to happen is you're going to fail, right? Without question, everybody will fail. But the other thing that's going to happen is sometimes you won't fail. And actually, not failing is worse than failing. Because as soon as you don't fail, you start thinking that you have something to bring to the table, right? You start thinking you're worth something. And then once you start thinking you're worth something, then you start guarding your work, right? So you have this one that you've been caring for, and then there's this home meeting where they just love to pray like crazy, you know. And so you're afraid that if you bring them into this home meeting and everybody's sitting there, for God so loved the world, God so loved the world, that guy is just going to stand up and walk out, and you'll never see him again, right? And so we have this subconsciously, we almost can get into a trap of protecting our contacts from the church instead of bringing them into the church, right? We want to bring them into the church, not to keep them away from the church. And if we realize what the church is and what the Lord is doing, then we realize that what we have is not this thing that's going to chase away your friends and contacts. What we have is this wonderful group of saints that are going to help your friends and contacts to love the Lord so much. You know, none of us can do it alone. You know, we're in a heavenly team. Right? Don't think that we know so much. You know, and especially when you're young. Like, I don't know, David, can you answer? I don't know. Would you say you've led more than 50 people to the Lord? No? Andrew? See, I wish Robbie was here, because I know Robbie probably has. You know, I mean, the there are brothers and sisters that are in your home meeting that have a lot more experience than you. Would you say you've spent more than 100 hours in appointments? More than 1,000? Probably even more. Maybe even 5,000 or something. How many times has, you know, some of these brothers that have been serving for 10 or 15 or 20 years just sat in appointments, read ministry? How much experience is there? You know, and now you have one new contact that you talk to 3 times. But somehow we can get this idea that we already know more than that brother right there. you know, because this is my contact, now I suddenly know everything. Well, you don't know everything, and you don't need to know everything. That's the important thing. You don't need to know everything. This is why the church and the campus work need to be in constant fellowship, right? They're on the one hand, like we were saying yesterday, the students are the best ones to go out and contact people. But behind the students, there are these home meetings, there's the full-timers, there's the elders. There is all of this help that's just there. So you don't need to bring new ones into the church life all by yourself. You know, you just need to have fellowship with the ones that have some experience and the ones that have some more capacity and that have some more ability. So it's a heavenly team. I was just thinking of this. This is a little, an example is, you know, the Chicago Bulls. They just hired a new coach, you know, and I was reading this article about, you know, they have a point guard. Probably some of the brothers know Derrick Rose, right? Yeah, you can say yes. Anyway, he was Rookie of the Year a couple of years ago, and he's a bright young star. You know, he's a future. He's the future of the Bulls, right? And so, just reading this article about how he's getting related to his new coach. And he says he'll go there, and it'll be 11 o'clock at night, and the coach is watching film. And the coach will come out, and he'll help him work on his three-point shot and explain the defense to him and explain the offense to him. And, you know, so he's really, this new coach is really helping this player to learn how to play better. And the player actually really appreciates what the coach is doing for him. Now, what the coach is not doing is saying, I'm going to be the new starting point guard. You take a seat on the bench. Right? If he did that, that would be a disaster. Because the player needs to be the player, and the coach needs to be the coach. Right? And because the coach is the coach, he can make the player a better player. Right? So I was just thinking about this in terms of the students and the ones that are in the home meetings and the full-timers. You're surrounded by coaches, right? Don't just think the player coach is the only coach. You know, there is so much help there for you. There is so much help. You don't need to do it all by yourself. But you do need to fellowship to get the help. You know, that's what I really, you know, this coach before he was with the Bulls, he was with the Rockets, and there was, Yao Ming was playing for the Rockets, and he's from China. He actually went to China for 2 months. Twice he went to China just to help this player learn to grow, you know. So, I mean, this is what the kind of relationship, this kind of constant personal care, this kind of relationship. But it can only happen if the students and the full-timers are participating in it. So, and not just the full-timers, but also the families. So then, the point one here, the older and more experienced saints are the foundation and the framework of the church. The young people are the ones who carry out the Lord's move in a direct way. So, this is, in 1 John, it says, I have written to you, fathers, because you know him who is from the beginning. And it's not just about right and wrong. It's about him and not him. You know, and as young people start planning activities and planning to do things, some of the things that they can plan just don't match the Father. They just don't match the source. And you can say, well, what's wrong with this or what's wrong with that? And it's not about, is it wrong or right or, you know, what kind of music or whatever. What it is it's just not the Father. And when you're young and you haven't been through that much, you haven't passed through that much, sometimes you just don't know the Father. But the fathers know the Father. Right? Some of the older brothers, they just have a better sense. This is the Lord, and this isn't the Lord. Right? So as you're, you don't need to hijack the church. You know? To just go to the fathers and just open up. Well, this is what we were thinking. And they might say, well, that sounds good, but this, I just have a... I have some concerns about this. Take that concern. Allow yourselves to be checked by the fathers. Because the fathers know him who was from the beginning. All right? It's not a put down. You don't know him who was from the beginning yet. You're just too young. You know? I know this because I was your age, but you haven't been my age. So, I remember I was about 21, 22. I was reading this book by Watchman Nee, and he was talking about this and how the young people, they just don't know the Lord enough, and so they'll go out and they'll try and do things, and you know, it'll be natural, and it's, and I remember reading that, I was so offended. I was like, how do you know there? You can't be. You know, how do you know? Maybe it really is the Lord. Now I know that when I was 22, it was just a lot of natural. You know, when you're 22, you don't know it's natural because you don't know him. But then as you grow, you start to be able to say, oh, I was just natural. So anyway, since you can't know, check with them, check with the fathers. Check with those who know him who was from the beginning. But then on the other side, I like this in point two. It says the church's responsibility is to do everything necessary to help the young brothers and sisters to carry out their work. It doesn't say the church's responsibility is to tell the young people what to do. Right? That's not what the church is supposed to do. It's not supposed to say, okay, and you know, we somewhat are trying to break out of this. Maybe to some degree we've had this kind of way of working where we would just, maybe we wouldn't admit it, but effectively, okay, we're going to have a table. We need two college students to be there. You know, Tim, can you be there Tuesday at 2:00? You know, so who's carrying out the work? And you know, it's not that the older saints plan everything and then just tell the young people what to do. It shouldn't be like that. It should be the young people are involved in the process from the beginning. You know, so we sit down with Tim and say, well, there's this orientation, what should we do? Right? And then Tim should be involved and come up with ideas, and then we work together with him. Right, and you should be able to receive our fellowship because we have some experience. But we shouldn't just be telling college students what to do. But rather, the older ones should be doing everything possible to help the young people. Right? So maybe some of the students get together and they say, you know, okay, our Bible study would be helped a lot if we could have pizza after the meetings. Right? But college students are bankrupt. You know, it's like if you have change, you feel wealthy, right? So you go to the home meeting and you say, you know, we have this Bible study. We'd like to have pizza. Maybe the church does something to pay for the pizza, right? Or maybe it's not just that. Maybe it's you know, sometimes young people need to do laundry. Sometimes they need to do laundry and they don't realize they need to do laundry. Sometimes they realize they need to do laundry, but they only have 2 quarters, so they don't have money to do laundry. You know, there can be such a sweet kind of, come over to my house and do laundry, right? And then you have a chance to spend time and fellowship with them. Right, so we should be enablers, not bosses, the church, and you should recognize that that's what we want to be, you know. So don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to ask for help. I know, at least in Chicago, I know for a fact that there are probably 50 saints that right now would love to be more involved with the college students. But the college students don't ask. And so, you know, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to call and ask, Jude. So, the students should bring their burden for their fellow students to the church in order to stir up the whole church to pray for what they are doing. So wouldn't it be great if there were a meeting that the church had that was just for prayer, where you could, like, go and say, can we pray for this person? You know, if there was a meeting like that, wouldn't you go? We could call it the prayer meeting, just so there's no confusion. So go to the prayer meeting. Amen. Right? That's the best place to go to bring up your friends for prayer. It is best if the students refer their activities on campus to the experienced brothers and sisters, including full-timers, for help, fellowship, and coordination. And, you know, I was going over this with Dion, and I appreciate he was pointing out, it doesn't say it is best if the students defer their activities, right? There's a big difference between defer and refer, right? So you're not just submitting to bosses. You're fellowshipping. You're coordinating. You're consulting, you know? So there should be such a sweet fellowship. We must present our bodies to the Lord for the church meetings. So I know sometimes I'll have students say, well, I was at the meeting in spirit, you know, and they'll talk about how Paul was at the meeting in spirit. Well, you know, okay, Paul was in prison, so he had an excuse. If you're in prison for preaching the gospel, you have permission to be there in spirit. If you're not in prison for preaching the gospel, you're not there in spirit, unless you're there in body, okay? Come to the meetings, all right? So in Hebrews 10:26, to sin willfully means to abandon one's own assembling together with the church. And this is really to make a habit of not going to the meetings. You know, sometimes there is something comes up and you can't make the meeting, you know, because you need to do something. There's some sort of group that only needs to meet, can only meet on Sundays or something like that. That's understandable. But I'd also like to say, you know, like sometimes study groups end up becoming the thing that you're doing instead of going to the meeting. And then you ask, well, why is it that nobody else can come on Tuesday? And they say, well, you know, Bob has a judo class, and somebody else has to watch, you know, a TV show, and, you know. So it's like, why is everything everybody else does more important than what you have to do? Why can't you say, you know, I can't make it on Tuesday night, I have a prayer meeting, you know? That's one, that's a testimony. It's not just a testimony you're a believer. It's a testimony that it means something to you. Right, that you don't just automatically defer to be the last one on the rung. Fight for the prayer meeting. You know, say, can we have it on another night? I'm sorry, my prayer meeting is more important than your TV show, or more important than your judo class. Change your judo class. You know. So. Of course, you might want to tell them that more nicely because they know judo. Yeah. The meetings of the church include bread breaking meetings and prayer meetings, as well as meetings for the exercise of gifts and for mutual building. So, That's pretty self-explanatory. And then I want to emphasize this last point in following up on the brother's burdens from this morning. When we come to the church meeting, we should have something of the Lord to share with others. Before coming to the meeting, we should prepare ourselves for the meeting. After coming into the meeting, we should not wait for an inspiration. We should exercise our spirit and use our mind to function. Right? So we need to be prepared for the meetings. And I was just considering, you know, we have those Holy Word for Morning revivals, right? And at the beginning of every week, there is an outline. And that outline is really impressive. And it doesn't matter which topic you're on or which conference you're on or which week you're on. Every outline is really impressive. You know? And if you take 2 hours a week, you know, I started doing this about in January. Take 2 hours a week and just go through the outline. Read the verses in the outline. Look at the subject. Consider, you know, like you've got the Roman numerals. How are they related? Why are those Roman numerals Roman numerals? Consider the letters underneath them. Read the verses and the footnotes that are referenced. And just spend a couple of hours a week understanding that outline. And the truth is a cumulative thing. Right? And if every week you spend a couple of hours getting into whatever the church is in, over 4 years of college, you will have gone through 208 outlines. Right? Now, don't you? 208 outlines, you will know the truth. Right? And this is important for a few reasons. One, if you have a new one that you're taking care of, it's not, don't think that when we talk about the students are the best ones to contact, the ones on the campus, they, you know, okay, hi, Michael, I'm Kelly, nice to meet you. Would you like to come to a meeting with me? Okay, come with me. All right, I want you to meet David over here. He really knows the Bible. Okay. Bye, Michael. Sorry. Thanks, Mike. My responsibility doesn't end once I've handed him off to the full-timer, right? I should be Michael's friend, right? And then as I'm getting to know Michael, Michael will have questions. And if I'm studying the truth, I don't have to bring him to David to get the answers, right? If I'm studying the truth week to week, there's always something fresh in me. And so if he doesn't ask me questions, I can just tell him what I'm enjoying, right? Don't think that the truth is what the full-timers do and the contacting is what you do. You know, you should be able to help your friends to know the truth also. And so that's one thing. Another thing is, when they come with you on the Lord's Day meeting, and you stand up and prophesy something that you've prepared, and something that's articulate, something that's intelligent, something that's insightful, then you're becoming a pattern to that student. Right? If you bring your student to the meeting, your friend to the meeting, and you sleep, you're also setting a pattern. No matter what you do in the meeting, you're setting a pattern. But what kind of pattern are you setting? Right? So don't just think that you can always come to the meeting and come up with some inspiration. No. Spend 2 hours a week studying the truth. And I know that can seem like a lot. Well, if it seems like a lot, then study 1 hour a week. But I also want to just mention what I was saying at the beginning. Don't just think about as little as you can do. Think about how much you can do to build up the church. Don't think, do I have to do 2 hours a week? Think, how can I carve out 2 weeks to study the Bible? And be one who really helps build up the church.
Start out by clarifying I'm not moving to Columbus. Yeah. I will be visiting Columbus soon for the Thanksgiving conference. So anyway, sorry. I like to tease Andrew a lot, and he taught me that practice, by the way. Amen. So, very good. So now I really appreciate what Kelly started off with. In all of this consideration for the effective gospel work, what is the goal of our gospel work? And that's just Roman numeral 1. It's God's desire is to have the church. So everything we do is for the church. We go on campus, we're meeting people, we're fellowshipping in our nucleus, we're praying. What for? For the church. Say it boldly.
For the church.
Amen. For the church. Good. So, well, how is it that we're going to, obviously the church isn't there with you on campus. Not much, you know. You might have a full-timer who's dropped his job who can be there with you, but most of the saints in the church are not going to be there. It's going to be some students mostly, and if the locality has the means, maybe there's a few full-timers there. So how is it that this labor on the campus is going to come into the church? And so actually I want to show you is in Roman numeral 2, the main way, the main bridge for this contacts that you guys meet on the campuses to come into the church is in the homes. Okay? So let's read Roman numeral 2 together. We need many homes of the saints for coordination in the gospel work. Every young person who goes to the campus needs a home for his camp contacts. Good. So you're all young persons, right? So what does each one of you need? A home. All right. Each one of you needs a home. Good. A home meeting? Maybe a home meeting. It's okay. It's nothing wrong. Home meetings are wonderful, right? That was a great recovery of the Lord from the hall. You know, I don't know if you've heard in the church life. You know, even as long in the 80s, you know, mostly was they came to the hall day after day, a lot of meetings. When I was in Austin, the brothers told me that I was in Austin. I was in 2001. I came to the church life. They said back in the 80s, early 90s, all the meetings, the saints just came to the hall every night, into the hall, all these different meetings. So that was a great recovery to go to the homes. That's a big deal. So I'm not saying that's home meetings are wonderful, but there is a little. There can be a distinction in meaning between a home meeting and just a home. So I hope that each one of you has a home. maybe you can, whoever has their Old Testament, read Psalm 84, verse 3. It's a really sweet verse. I'm going to flip. Psalm 84, verse 3. Me and Aaron were looking at this yesterday, right? It's a good verse, very sweet. Everyone who's got it flipped there. Not easy to find those Old Testament books, right? Okay. Ready? Let's go. At your two altars, even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. O Jehovah of hosts, my King and my God. That's good, right? A sparrow has found a home. And the swallow has, what has the swallow found? A nest. For who? First for herself. And then, where she may lay her young, right? So, you know, I don't know if you guys all have a home, and I don't know what the situation is in all the different localities, but each one of you should find a home. And I like what Kelly brought out. It's okay to be proactive. Like, I'm in Chicago with him, and my goodness, at UIC, there are so many saints, so many homes, so many houses, so many families living right around the campus. And we have some students there. And but a lot of times there's not a connect, you know, between the two. And so, anyway, who's at fault? Why isn't there the connect? Maybe there's a lot of reasons. But I can tell you one thing you can do is you can actually, when you see that saint in a meeting or whenever you finally get to meet them, ask them, can I come to your home? Of course, you know, you can pray first. That'd be good to pray, Lord, I need a home. Lord, here I am in the meeting. I'm in the Lord's Day meeting. There's all these saints. I don't even know them, you know. So when you have opportunity, get to know the saint first, maybe. There was this one brother, Matt Payne. And some of you guys know the story. When he was in Austin, he actually, I don't know how he knew of this couple. It was an older couple in the church life. Actually, they at the time, they were a little not super active in the church life. But somehow he knew of them, and he was a student. And for, I don't know how, he just got a burden one night, and he just called up this couple. And he said, "Can I come to your house?" And the couple was like, "Why?" And I don't even know if it took them a little while, but they're like, "Okay, I guess so." I think maybe he said something, "I'll bring some pizza. I just want to come over and know you saints." And so he came over, and he just spent some time with them, got to know them. And they enjoyed it. He enjoyed it. He asked if he could come over again. And so he started going to that home. And eventually, he brought his friend with him. And anyway, eventually that turned into a home meeting that, when I was in Austin, it had already happened. And that was just one of the many home meetings. It was the D-Balls home meeting. So anyway, so you can see it's okay for students to be proactive in this matter. Actually, do you think, just like the D-Balls, do you think that the saints are going to say no to you? If you call them up or you go up to the saint, "Can I come to your home and spend some time with you?" You think they're going to say no? Would you ever say no, Lydia? It's so hard, right?
He may say no.
I just don't want to answer. Anyway, so amen. That's the first point, is that we need homes. Second point, and I'm trying to go quickly here, is if the saints gathered in a home are well coordinated. Why don't you put a box around that phrase, well coordinated. The new ones will be inspired with what they see. Our service in coordination will touch, soften, and warm up their heart to receive the living, piercing word. So we want our new ones to receive the living, piercing word, right? So how are we going to make sure they receive that word? Should we just speak with a strong spirit to them? Speak the point with a strong spirit so that they'll receive the living, piercing word. Sounds like we should do that, right? Or maybe even just go meet with that. Just go meet your friend, you know, buy him a Coke or a coffee or whatever. Talk to him a little bit and then speak the word, right? Actually, that's not bad. It's not bad. Neither of those two are bad. But they won't be quite as effective or nearly as effective. Actually, it's amazing. This is amazing that what's most effective to open up that student, that friend of yours, what's the most effective thing that's going to warm them and open them to the word? It's the home, but it's actually specifically it's the coordination in that home. Okay, so that's why I had you box that well coordinated. If the saints gathered in a home are well coordinated, I've been in many homes where we were not well coordinated. And even we try to have a meal, we sing some songs, we get into the word. And, you know, there's benefit. But I don't think there was a capturing atmosphere there. And so there needs to be this coordination. All I can do, I don't have time to get into the matter of coordination too much, but if you want to write down, I'll give you some verse references. And in your time today or when you go back to your campus, consider these verses, okay? These are all related to coordination. It's Ezekiel 1. Actually, the whole chapter is good. It's just one chapter, Ezekiel 1, with the footnotes. But especially, if you just want to focus on the coordination, verses 5 through 14. And there, do you know what it talks about there? The four living creatures. Yeah, I don't know. It's amazing. Why did God put this in the Bible? This crazy picture. It's four living creatures. So crazy. You read that chapter, it's out there, you know? Why is it there in the Bible? So read those verses and read the footnotes, and you'll see how are these ones coordinated. This is a picture of how we should be coordinated, one, on the campus with the other students in our nucleus, right? So this will benefit. If you get into these points and you pray over these points, this will help you in your coordination with the fellow students. But also, we need to have this kind of coordination in the home with the saints in the home. Aaron was telling me in their home meeting, they just recently found out, or at one point they found out, one of the sisters cooking all the food. You guys go to home meetings, right? And the sisters cook the food. Probably the mom is there cooking the food. Do you have any idea what's going on in the mom's life, you know? And sometimes, you know, the moms, they can be on their last leg or string, yeah. They're barely holding on by a thread, right? You know, so much. They got babies. They've got a feed. They've got school. They've got so many things they're taking care of. And then all of a sudden, 30 kids are coming over to eat at their place Friday night. Better have food ready, right? And so, anyway, we don't even know what's going on. There needs to be the coordination. Of course, the main way we coordinate is through prayer, you know. We pray together. I know in Austin, there was eventually this thing developed. After the prayer meeting, there was a time where when the general prayer of the church was done, all of the saints, actually, they stuck around a little bit and they grouped together in their homes, right? I don't know if you guys were there when this was happening, but so after the prayer meeting, then all of the Jenkinson's home meeting, they kind of huddled up just for a little while, and the Sins home meeting huddled up for a while, the D-Ball's home meeting, they huddled up for a while, and they just, the students there with the families, and they just started to pray a little bit, open up just a little bit, and it was only 10, 15 minutes. But that was coordination, right? And that helps to bring in the last point, point B. Oh, sorry, let me give you the one other verse reference that's good for coordination is 1 Corinthians 12, verses 14 through 22. Okay, and in that we see that Christ, the Christ is a body with many members, and these many members are coordinated. So you can read those verses and footnotes as well. So point B, can we read together? Our living rooms should be filled with the enjoyment of Christ in the Word, with singing and psalming. Such an atmosphere of enjoyment and mutuality requires a great deal of coordination. Good. So we all want to have this kind of atmosphere, right? And we've probably experienced this atmosphere in our homes many times. But actually, to maintain that kind of atmosphere and to enhance that atmosphere, to strengthen that atmosphere, of enjoyment and mutuality. I don't know if have you ever been in a home meeting where there was the enjoyment was actually, you wanted to enjoy, but it was just a little low. You know, something wasn't right. Even you wanted to personally, right? Oh, I really want to enjoy. And I'm here with the saints, and you know, but something's just, there's no ingredients, not there. You know, something is lacking. Or have you ever been in a home meeting where mutuality wasn't there? Where two members end up doing all the praying, all the calling of the tongues, you know, all the speaking of the word. Everyone else is kind of, you know. Of course, that's related to what Kelly talked about, preparing ourselves before the meeting. That's an excellent point. But another matter is just, if we're more coordinated, if you've prayed together with the saints in your home, let's say Wednesday night, you called up, you know, one of the saints in the home, and you prayed with them for that home meeting, and then you show up on Friday, do you think that there'll be a little more enjoyment for you and for that saint and be more mutuality? Your function will actually, it'll just jump right out of you if you've coordinated and prayed for that home meeting with those saints. So anyway, we want to have this kind of atmosphere. If we have this ingredient, and you start bringing your friends to that, it's just going to be like a magnet. It's just bringing them. They are seeking the saints. All your friends, this is what they're seeking in life. They have no goal. They have no rest. They don't know it sometimes. And you just barely, somehow you get them to this place or to this home, right? But when there's this going on, they're just drawn to it. They don't even know why. And they just give themselves. They see the real society. They see the real joy. They see the meaning of their life. So anyway, let's, as you go back to your localities, consider these points, pray over these points, and hopefully all of you will have a home with this kind of coordination.